Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 73 of The Prerogative. This week, Lord Death joins the party as we cover the 2008 anime sensation Soul Eater, right here as we continue our month of Monster Mash.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast.
Yes, this week we are covering Soul Eater, a series which is currently airing on Toonami. So with that being said, I do have to give the fair warning that if you are watching it for the first time on Toonami as it's currently going right now, there will be spoilers in this review. So, if you don't want to be spoiled, you might want to stow this episode, away for later, in about 3 months when they finally get to the end. There's 51 episodes in the series, so it'll reach the end. Actually, pretty much a year. You know, there's 52 weeks in a year and 51 episodes. So, yeah. That being all said, so there will be spoilers. So, if you don't want to be spoiled, check it back in a couple months. But yes, Soul Eater, a series that came out in 2008. You know, I've had many chances to actually watch this series before this time. I've just never gotten to for multiple reasons. Though in the past couple years, it has been the knowledge that I'm doing a podcast. I know at some point I'm going to get to this series. And so I've, to some extent, held back on watching it. This, of course, includes being on Toonami. Mind you, I DVR it. Don't watch it. But not for not wanting to watch it, for knowing that I was going to eventually review it, which actually made it interesting. Like, oh god, I'm reviewing something that's on Toonami right now. Great, now I have to put spoiler tags. But that being said, you know, I remember when this series first came out. I remember my anime club at the time, the Tampa Bay Anime Club. Hi guys. Hi Mike. Hi Billy. Hi Kalee. Hi Les. I remember at the time, you know, it came out, we actually watched the... I believe we watched the first episode. I think we also may have watched the second episode, though I can't remember. But I do remember watching the first episode, and I was enjoying it immensely. I also remember my other anime club that I would later join in the same area, run by my good friend, Austin. Hey, Austin, how are you? I remember getting to watch a couple of the episodes from the teen aspect. Again, this is a 50-episode series, so I'm talking about like episodes 1 through 10. At some point there were a couple episodes that I had catched as part of that club. But up until it came on Toonami, you know, that was it. And I've caught a couple episodes. As I said, I've been holding back watching it because I know I'm going to review it. Now that I've reviewed it, I can sit down and enjoy it with everybody else. Of course, I now know what's going to happen. So maybe I've kind of sneaked a peek. Though I do have a feeling that probably most people who are watching Toonami these days have probably already seen it. So that's a mute point. But, you know, this series came out to much beloved fanfare, with a lot of people saying one thing in particular. Oh, this is the series that, you know, if Tim Burton created an anime, this is what it would look like. Which is very fair, considering the art. You know, by the way, this is a shonen series. It's a Shonen Jump series. I'm sorry, it's not a Shonen Jump. It's a Square Enix series. I apologize. But it is considered a shonen series. So it does follow sort of the same shonen sort of plot lines. I think I got confused by it being Shonen Jump because, it's licensed by Funimation. At one point it was almost licensed by Viz, or at least the manga may have been released by Viz. Maybe that's where I got the confusion. I'm probably confusing it with something else. But yeah. Again, came out to much fanfare, and when you look at the art, again, obviously influenced by Tim Burton. Not just the art, you know, the music has a distinct a feel of influence from, like, Danny Elfman scores. And again, we'll be talking about that in a little bit. There's just everything about this series. It really is something that you could imagine that if Tim Burton wanted to do what Stan Lee did a couple years ago, to where, hey, I'm gonna, you know, partner with some, you know, Japanese anime manga writers, and we're gonna create an anime story, a manga story, based on the sort of anime style. You know, this is kind of what I feel it would look like, and that's why a lot of people, I think, are it's fair to say, they have that point. Not necessarily. I'm kind of going on with this like it's some bad point. I think my fear is that a lot of people will hear me say it's Tim Burton anime. Like, oh, well, they're trying to rip off Tim Burton's style. But I think it's a testament to the style that Tim Burton has created. Tim Burton has this sort of gothic and sort of macabre style that's all his own that he has created. That you see things in, like, Nightmare Before Christmas and The Corpse Bride in the Batman movies, especially Batman Returns. But, you know, it's this very unique style that is very different, and it really is in its own category. And this anime is a testament to that individual stylism, that it's basically taken that style and had it be a huge influence on the series. So all of that is stuff we're going to get into more as we continue with the series. So with that being said, let's get right into it with our synopsis. Soul Eater is set at the Death Weapon Meister Academy, the DWMA for short, located in the fictional Death City in Nevada, United States. Because where else would you have Death City other than Nevada, the place where everybody loses their money? The school is run by a Shikigami known as Lord Death, and is used as a training facility for humans with the ability to transform into weapons known as, and as well, the wielder of those weapons known as Meisters. Attending this school are the Meister Maka Albin and her scythe partner Soul Eater, the assassin Black Star and his partner Tsubaki Nakatsukasa, who can turn into a variety of different weapons, such as the Kushigami, Shuriken, and Ninjutsu, and of course, Lord Death's son, Death the Kid, and his pistol partners, Liz and Patty Thompson. The goal of the Schoolmeister students is to have their weapons defeat and absorb the souls of 99 evil humans and one witch, which will dramatically increase the power of the given weapon and turn them into a death sight, a weapon capable of being used by Lord Death. Shortly after the beginning of our journey in Soul Eater, a witch named Medusa infiltrates the DWMA with the goal of reviving the very first Kishin, a race of evil entities named Asura, with the intention of helping him plunge the entire world into madness. So our epic heroes must journey to stop Medusa and stop the revival of Asura. This is Soul Eater. Let's get right into it, as we always do. Let's start off by talking about music, and of course, we're going to talk about the opening and ending themes. And this anime is very unique in the fact that it has six pieces of music to initially talk about when it comes to talking about the opening and closing themes. Two openings and four closings. The two openings are Reconnaissance by TM Revolution, and Paper Moon by Tommy Heavenly. Sex. The second one starts from episode 31 onward. Remember, this is a 51 episode series. The first closing is I Wanna Be by Stans Punk, used for the first 13, and for the 51st episode. The second is Style by Kana Nishohino, used from 14 to 26. The third one is Bakuso Yume Ota, used by Soul Out, Digimo, from 27 to 39. And then finally is Strength by Alden Boys School, from 40 to 50. Whew! I was fearing I was going to mess up on there at some point. You know what, let's start with the endings here, because they're the most, vibrant. My favorite definitely is I Wanna Be by Stans Punk. It has this sort of alternative, punk rock, more towards the sort of classic rock that you'd hear from, like, the Pillows. Because that's what I kept thinking, is this just sounds like something the Pillows would sing. But it has more of a punk sound to it. But yeah, I just love that sound, and I love the overall melody played in here, and it's definitely something unique. I mean, that's the thing about all these endings. All these endings, as opposed to the openings, which I feel have much more of a connection to what's going on in the series and the overall series. Again, it's just fun music that's played at the end. Again, here's the ending. Till next week, and some just great music. It does fall into that category of it's Japanese bands are like, oh hey, you want to play something for the series, and it's a popular series, so it's gonna also to an extent advertise the band's new song. At the same point in time, the music is very good, so I can't complain about it too much. That being said, I Wanna Be is a very interesting ending song that I think of all of them fits the most to the series. Style is just a very sort of Japanese pop song. It's the one that, of all the songs that I've heard, and I'm talking about like music in the series as well, it's the one that I think fits the least to the series. It's much more of a subdued sort of song. The third one, which is by Sold Out's Diggy Mo, it is a very interesting one. Which, if you've not heard Sold Out is sort of a pop rap group that has done some good stuff in the past. And, it fits the series. It does. It's you don't think to hear sort of a rap type of group singing, a song. And then Strength by Album Boys is really just more of a sort of classic rock. The front singer for that group is the same one for TM Revolution. And that's his sort of classic rock band that he fronts for. All in all the songs are good. Though, like I said, style fits it the least. But, it compares, or I should say, all of them pair, that word just snuck up on me. All those pale in comparison to how good the opening themes are, which are definitely the strength here in the opening and closing themes. Though, like I said, I Wanna Be and Bakuso Yomi Ota and Strength are good songs, and they do what they need to do for the ending. And style does what it needs to do to an extent, too, but my God, well, let's talk about Paper Moon first, because I think it's the weaker of the two. I want to say the best for last here. Paper Moon, just a sort of great, I'm trying to look at the, what it would, consider it. I'm looking at my notes here. It's not giving me style of music, which I hate. I hate when it does that, by the way. It calls it sort of alternative rock. I want to be corrected, because we've had all different types of rock played with this anime. This being more of an alternative, almost a sort of pop rock type of music. And, I enjoy it. It definitely fits the second half of the series. There's definitely a different tone in the second half of the series from episode 31 onward. And I think Paper Moon does fit it perfectly. But in regards to what the overall feeling for the anime is, Reconnaissance by TM Revolution definitely is much better. And it's just amazing. It's one of those amazing opening themes. Like, first of all, it's a good song. If you've never heard of TM Revolution, they're sort of an electronic type of band, sort of dance and subwoofer. That's not a style. That's a musical equipment. Let me get down here. Synth pop. I don't know why I said subwoofer. Synth pop. I gotta go to different pages for my notes, by the way. But they, dance and electronic and sort of that type of sound is TM Revolution. But here, you can definitely feel sort of the influence they probably brought from not just the Danny Elfman, but, projects like A Nightmare Before Christmas or The Corpse Bride, though Corpse Bride hadn't been released this one, so definitely would be Nightmare Before Christmas. But you can definitely hear those influences in this song, and just the start of the song, those first notes, and then the build-up to the song starting proper is just incredible, and just fits the series, and it's a No, I love the melody. It's got a great beat to it. And like I said, it also does its job as an opening theme amazingly well. It gets you psyched up for the anime. You can't wait to watch the anime. And, you know, it also matches all the themes that you're going to be hearing and feeling for the anime, which, again, being that it's a shonen series, is not going to be much. They're not going to be big, but they're, you know, it's nothing deep. They're going to be shonen themes, as we'll get to in a little bit. But, yeah, it does all of that. It's just a wonderful piece of music. I just enjoy watching it. It's another great TM Revolution piece for an anime. I love TM Revolution. They've done so many great pieces of for, you know, anime opening themes. From Rurouni Kenshin to Gundam Seed and onward. And, of course, the songs that they're doing for Valviv right now, which, again, I love that anime. That's an anime I can't hope to talk about in some context in the future. But back to here, yeah, just great music. And then going to the overall score of the series, much more of a Japanese approach, a lot more, not so much silence, but a lot more, again, allowing sound effects and sort of the mood be the music. But there's music, and you can definitely hear sort of a Danny Elfman type of influence, a Nightmare Before Christmas type of influence. At the same point in time, the music is very typical of a shonen series. Again, not to sit there and say that it's bad, because this is not a knock that it's bad. It's very good, but at the same point in time, it is something I would expect to be in a shonen series. It is a soundtrack that I would love to hear over and over again. Again, it's just, if you're expecting something like groundbreaking, it's not. It's not groundbreaking, but it is very, very good. Again, it's a CD I would gladly pick up. Again, I like sort of those Halloween type of themes, to put it in a way. Definitely fits with the series. The music, it has a great balance to it. It blends perfectly into the background. It's really, really well done. With that, let's move on to animation. This is probably the big point to talk about with this series, because again, you know, when everybody sees the art, it's definitely, oh wow, it's a Tim Burton anime, which, to an extent, I kind of look at negativity in the sense that I think it takes away from the fact that it's also a series that is done by Bones. And I've really yet to see a series by Bones where I've absolutely hated the art. I mean, again, Bones is the same animation studio that did Hero Man, for an example. So I've just always loved Bones anime. They did Star Driver, by the way, as well. They've always done great animation. And they did a great job here of capturing that sort of Tim Burton style in the animation, in both the way they use the colors, because one aspect of a Tim Burton style is the colors. You know, he uses a lot of black and whites, but he also uses a fair amount of color. It's just the color, it's sort of the third dominant color. You know, the most dominant color probably in a Tim Burton series is black, quickly followed by white, and then color. So if you look at most of the character designs and a lot of the color, the predominant color throughout the series is going to be black and white. But what that does is actually make the other colors, you know, like Black Star's hair, the red pleated aspect of Maki's dress, sort of Sol's yellow jacket, or the yellow stripes in his jacket. The second half of the series, he's wearing a black jacket and he has this orange shirt. All the characters, you look at their color scheme, and this goes for the backgrounds and stuff like that. Again, black and white are the predominant colors in those things, but again, it makes the colors, the other colors that are on them, pop more. It's almost as if the colors are highlighters, or sort of highlighting colors, because of the black and the white. It's really amazing to see. I think that's something that people really don't acknowledge as part of the Tim Burton style, but that is definitely a part of it. And then, of course, sort of the very macabre. Another aspect is the angular aspect of it. You look at a Tim Burton style, you look at Corpse Bride, Night Before Christmas, everything. Everything's very angular. Not round and not round and soft, sort of like that classic Disney style, but angular, very edgy, sort of to fit that sort of gothic type of style. Very hard lines. And in this one, they get a bit sketchy with it, too. One thing I just found interesting, and again, this goes into character design a little bit, but again, like, whenever they have a close-up on Lord Death's face, I look at his eyes, and I'm trying to remember, I want to say it's a Van Gogh painting. It's the one with the screaming face. I believe it's a Van Gogh. My knowledge here is escaping me in paintings. But it's sort of that I say that because there's sort of these where he loses a lot of circles in that painting. You look into his eyes, it's very much of that same sort of surrealistic idea where you have the circles and this, and you look at it and there's a circle inside a circle inside a circle inside a circle. Circles used for that detail. It's not just these black eyes. You see this sort of, I don't want to call it white, but sort of grayish line work in that. Eyes. It's really amazing to look at. Just the amount of detail there, just absolutely fantastic. But that's also what I mean, that there's sort of those hard lines there. And everything you see, just the angularness within the series. I mean, there's fluidity to it, but again, and there's curves here or there, but a lot of it is, you know, for instance, the Soul, when he's in Scythe mode, and the other scythes that are in the series, they are curved blades, but at the same point in time, they're curved blades in the sense of that the blade is at a 90-degree angle as to from where it starts, as opposed to the handle, as a scythe is. And a lot of weapons have sort of either straight or angular properties to it, and yet they're not completely rigid. There's a very much of a fluidity to it that I definitely think is the influence of Bones' style. And the thing is that all of the art just pops off the screen, and it's just gorgeous and beautiful. Again, going into the character designs, again, the character designs themselves are very Tim Burton. You know, Maki is a very Tim Burton-inspired character, a female protagonist character. You know, looking at her, I am reminded of Lydia from Beetlejuice, or, I can't believe I'm blanking on her name, Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas. Part of it is that, you know, the way the pigtails and how thin they are and everything, and the fact that sort of the clothing combo, that's another aspect that makes it very Tim Burton, is the way they wear their clothes. That sort of pleated sort of schoolgirl skirt with the yellow, but the black trench coat works so well with her character. Very Tim Burton like, and again, her design is very Tim Burton like. Soul, the way his hair is angular and everything, and that it's white, and the way his teeth are, again, it's just a very Tim Burton design. Death the Kid, another example. Death the Kid. Him being symmetrical to an extent, and being in all black. The color scheme matching the same as his father, being black and white, but again, being enough different. The pale face screams Tim Burton. Even Black Star. You would think it's probably the farthest from it. Has sort of Tim Burton art-inspired qualities to him that is just very well done. The angularness of the hair, the way, the sort of the pale aspect of the green in the hair, and just the way, the fact that, again, the shoe quality, which almost has a Kingdom Hearts quality to it. That's one thing I'll say, is that all the shoes that all of them wear, have almost a Kingdom Heart quality to it, which I find amazing. I mean, really think about the way, not quite as big and goofy as they are in Kingdom Hearts, but they almost have this sort of, they seem bigger than they really should be. But just the change and everything on Black Star, again, that's that Tim Burton quality. The way that there's a lot of characters wearing their clothing, you know, Liz and Patty, Frankenstein, Marie, they all have these, like, sort of stitch patterns in their clothes and everything. Very macabre, very much Tim Burton-like. Frankenstein, or essentially Dr. Frankenstein, is a very, very Tim Burton character. Yeah, that really is, like, if Tim Burton did the Frankenstein character, that's probably what it would look like. Bar none, and I think we can all agree on that. You know, Marie being, having sort of the eye patch, a beauty with the eye patch, very macabre, very Tim Burton-like in her design. Again, the blacks and the yellows, I mean, all the designs here are just incredible. The, probably the most Bones design, and sort of the more anime, and sort of the least Tim Burton feel, is probably Tsubaki. She's more well-rounded everything. But it's this nice contrast to the rest of the character designs that allow her to fit very, very well. So overall, just I thought extremely well. Again, just you just feel the inspiration from, you know, that idea of a Tim Burton design. The action animation is just beautifully choreographed. There are, again, and I say a lot about action animation. But I really love the fact that, again, it seems very choreographed. It's not this stylized, like, one move and sort of silhouettes and that type of stuff. There's choreography. There's length to the fight. You can see the movement. You can see the battle tactics. There's a fluidity to it that really makes the action animation in this series not just feel like an add-on. It's done extremely well, and I very much enjoy it. And it's also, there's a fun quality to it that I enjoy. And again, almost a Tim Burton aspect to it of being within the action. That being said, we then move on to the backgrounds and special effects. And the backgrounds are just amazing. The DWMA is just an amazing background. Just a great use of CGI in connection with hand-drawn animation. To the, you know, the sun in the sky, which, again, it just, the backgrounds, the angular fashion, the sort of gothic and macabre, the way the backgrounds feel like characters themselves, again, another sort of almost Tim Burton inspiration, because, I mean, that's something Tim Burton would do. Tim Burton, when you watch his stuff, you know, he makes the backgrounds feel like characters themselves. They're not just backgrounds. They're true characters. They're part of the story. And the DWMA, especially in later episodes, for all those who are watching on Toonami, we haven't gotten there yet, literally are becoming characters. There's a little spoiler for you. But yeah, just, they really pop off the screen. They're really great locations. It's just fun to sit there and watch the episode and, like, as it's going around the DWMA and, like, wow, there's something and there's an interesting thing and influences and a connection with the overall themes in the series. So I just love the backgrounds. It just popped so well in the series. And then the special effects is, again, the use of CG due to special effects onto 2D animation. Just done extremely well. Mind you, I say 2D animation in the sense that it's 2D animation done on computers, but still 2D animation. But yeah, the special effects is done extremely well. The backgrounds, like I said, they just pop off the screen. The locations are wonderful. All the different locations they go to are wonderful. They're wonderfully animated. They're just gorgeous to look at. And, you know, they feel so alive that their characters among themselves as part of the series. So, I don't think I have to say the fact that definitely animation is not only the strength of this anime, but it's what gives it its individual style. It's what gives it its own uniqueness among anime. You know, I think it's safe to say that this is an anime that will be remembered for a long time because of its artistic style, which is more than I can say for a lot of animes that have great artistic style but won't be remembered. Not that I will name such animes. Gurren Lagann! I'm sorry, did that come out? I meant to say Gurren Lagann. With that, yeah, the sneeze got in the way there. But with that, it is time for a break. I know you're probably thirsty. I know I am. Time to pay some bills, imaginably, because in my head, I imagine I have bill collectors I have to pay to keep this podcast. Not that I do. I'm just wacky like that. And that doesn't help. That scares people, I know. But anyways, it's time for a break. I'm going to play some promos of some of my friends who podcasts I want you to listen to. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who. I don't care for anime. I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. And from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help. You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
Hello, podcast listener. Do you like
Ready to Form Voltron?
Or maybe how about
I am Batman?
Or
this is a job for Superman.
Do you remember
Power Rangers?
Or this?
Right away, Michael.
Or maybe even this?
Autobots, transform!
Or this?
By the power of Grayskull!
Or
for the honor of Grayskull!
Or have you seen the latest episode of
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then check out Charlie's Geekcast, hosted by me, Charlie Niemeyer. Charlie's Geekcast is a bi-weekly podcast covering comics and other geek stuff. The first episode of each month is devoted to comics, where I look at random comics from my collection. The other episode of the month is devoted to whatever else I want to talk about, such as movies, TV shows, cartoons, video games, and more. Feel free to check it out at www.charliesgeekcast.com.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Two! Three!
looking Nerf herder.
Oh no.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No!
Can I get your zipper?
Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fans.
F*** Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays. Available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it as we always do. And we're going to go with, of course, acting. And so that means it's time for our cast list. We have our starring cast for Soul Eater. Laura Bailey as Maki Alvin. Mikhail Sosad as Soul Eater Evans. Brittany Karbowski as Black Star. Monica Rial as Tsubaki Nakatsukasa. And I hope I'm saying that name right. Because, again, you know me with Japanese, by the way. Todd Happicorn as Death the Kid. Jamie Marchi as Liz Thompson. Charmy Leia as Patty Thompson. Maxie Whitehead as Corona. Leia Clark as Blair. Vic Mignogna as Spirit Alban. Chuck Huber as Dr. Frankenstein. Frankenstein, excuse me. It's Stina! I could go into a young Frankenstein bit here. I'm not. Continuing on, because I forgot it. John Swayze as Lord Death, the legendary John Swayze. The legendary Lucy Christian as Medusa. Stephanie Young as Arachne. And, of course, the legendary Chris Patton as Ursura. Let's start off with the antagonist here. Protagonist. we'll get to the antagonist. I'm still backed up on wanting to do a young Frankenstein joke and blanking on the... You know why I'm blanking, by the way? Because as much as I want to remember the whole, like, it's not Frankenstein, it's a Frankenstein bit from Young Frankenstein. Because of The Daily Show, all I can think of, because the whole, again, we're getting into politics, but the whole shutdown and everything, recently, The Daily Show did a joke using everybody's favorite meme of you get nothing, you lose, good day, sir. So now whenever I think of that legendary actor, all I can think of is that bit now. Thank you, Daily Show. Now that we've had the train roll off the tracks and go down the hill, and oh look, there's some survivors. Let's get back on track. But no, let's go with protagonists. You know, there are roles for voice actors that become career defining roles. Especially for voice actors, they have multiple, and you just have to figure out which ones they are. For all these voice actors, this series is definitely career-defining roles. Laura Bailey, you know, again, now when I hear these voices, this is going to be one of the animes, or these characters are going to be kind of like, oh, that's so-and-so from Soul Eater. I know Laura Bailey was just wonderful as Maki, you know, just brought a lot of enthusiasm to the role, just a joy to listen to. Mikhail just had a sort of great sort of smoothness with the character. Brittany Karbowski was just fun to listen to, just really into the role of Black Star, this guy who wants to be greater than the gods. And just brought a lot of excitement to the role, and it was just fun to listen to. It was great to hear Monica Rial in a role how should I say this? Wasn't an 8-year-old girl. You know, it's nice to hear her where she's not screaming her lungs out as the sort of lowly girl in the series that's there for comedy relief. It's nice to hear her in a much more of a subdued, sort of mature role. I actually prefer Monica Rial in these types of roles. Don't get me wrong, I love the role like she did, you know, for our last series where she was the young witch. But, you know, when she gets to do a more mature role and be a more subdued, you hear much more of her acting ability rather than when she's playing the constant comedic relief. So in that sense, I loved it. And again, it's one of those roles to where it is very defining for her. Tob Happicorn, again, another voice actor. We've had a couple of voice actors that were in Rosario Vampire Dead here. Colin Klinken, again, it's a Funimation, so of course there's some that were in there. But particularly, you know, you had Colleen Clickabeard, who was Marie. You had Jamie Marchi, Tob Happicorn, Monica Rial, all were in Rosario Vampire. But Tob Happicorn is Death the Kid, just sort of that monotone, just that matter-of-factly sort of voice that he brought. Very different from the voice he did in Rosario Vampire. Much a really a career-defining voice. Jamie Marchi and Charmy Lea as Liz and Patty Thompson, they just worked so well off each other. It was just great. They made great comedic relief, mind you. Maxie Whitehead as Corona, just again a career-defining voice. I loved sort of seeing his character evolve and listening to him evolve the character with his voice of this character going from this, you know, character just filled with fear and lost in the darkness and finding his way through the series. Lea Clark and Vic Mignogna, though Vic Mignogna's character had more serious character development in the series, Lea Clark was great comedic relief. That was our fan service. Like, okay, there's going to be a lot of macabre, a lot of stuff, girls are going to... Here's a little bit of fan service for you, which I thank them for. Because that's what Blair was there for. Blair there was there for the comedic joke of, hey, I'm going to walk around naked and give Soul a nosebleed. Thank you. But Vic Mignogna, you know, he was comedic relief, but he had the serious roles, and he did both aspects very well. Chuck Huber just played Steen very well, from the aspects of him being mad late in the series. Again, playing this character to where it is interesting that his character's sort of storyline was him delving into the badness of him wanting to dissect everything, because his character's seem to always be faulting on that line of madness. And John Sweezy. I haven't heard John Sweezy in a long time. It's great to hear John Sweezy. I have a profound connection with John Sweezy. It goes back with him and, oh my god, I apologize for blanking on his name. But again, being two of the really the core sort of voice directors that led to Redneck Gamera. Those would be some of my favorite moments in life. I remember the first 2 years of MetroCon I went, they were there and they were showing Redneck Gamera and sitting there with them having pizza and watching Redneck Gamera. Oh my god, it's fun. Oh, holy crap! I had to say it. I am a Redneck Gamera fanboy just because of that phrase. But back to here, and I say that, by the way, because the last time John Sweezy had a major role in a animation that we reviewed here on Tom's Prerogative was all the way back when I reviewed Collider Star. But John Sweezy did a wonderful job as Lord Death. You could tell he had so much fun with the character. With that, let's move on to antagonists. And now I'm going to say Lucy Christian's Medusa for a little, because that was probably the best villain. Stephanie Young, of like all the major villains, was probably the weakest. I mean, She did her role well, but it just, again, she was sort of that second villain, and she was more of this force than she was an actual character. That being said, Stephanie Young played her character very well, of this sort of witch that's always been in the background, always controlling things. Not to the extent that Medusa is, but of this sort of larger organization that wants to help the Kishin. Speaking of the Kishin, Chris Patton, as Ezra, again, most of his speaking role happening more towards the end of the series. It's great to hear Chris be able to do a villain. He doesn't get to do it much, but here he does it very, very well. I just enjoyed listening to him play a villain. And it did a great job of playing this character that was just diving into madness. And, of course, last but not least, we have Lucy Christian. Oh, my God, I love Lucy Christian in this role. She was just absolutely amazing. Lucy Christian must have been channeling her inner Joker here. And that's the best way I can describe the character of Medusa. It was very much a Joker. And mind you, when I say Joker, I mean Joker as in Joker the villain who is profoundly loved from the Batman mythos. Just in case you were wondering what the hell I was talking about. I figure most of you would have got what I said, but just in case, I'm talking about like the villain Joker from Batman. But just that same quality of just insane but understandable, insane but likable, insane but amazing to an extent. Just the way she had everything wrapped around her, you know, again, that sort of short-term planning, very much like what Heath Ledger did with the Joker in Dark Knight. At that point of, like, everything her character does, and you hear it in the voice, just with the confidence that she gives the character, being a character, everything leads into something else, and a backup plan for here, here, and here. What she intends to get, and yet she has her funny moments, which I like. I love that she is able to do this very evil, maniacal character, and yet have moments of, I think in particular I'm thinking of is, again, when she's entered the body of the little girl, and they go, and she allows herself, again, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it, because it hasn't premiered yet, she turns herself into the DWMA, because she has this plan to, because she's trying to get the two factions to go to war so that she can pick up the pieces afterwards. But she goes and wants to talk with Lord Death. And one of the first things Lord Death does is give her the chop. The death chop. And we'll be talking about this later because this goes into comedy. It's one of my favorite scenes in the whole series. But again, going more to that, like, actually showing fear, which really built upon the character. Lucy Christian did a lot of great voice work here. Just absolutely incredible. Like I said, the Joker-esque quality. Especially, not so much Jack Nicholson Joker, as much more Heath Ledger Joker. But just the maniacal, just this fit the character so well. Really, I think, a career-defining role for her, especially being that it's one of the few times she actually does really get to play a villain. So in that sense, I thought, just absolutely amazing. With that, let's move on to story. And of course, our first point is, let's talk about those main themes and that plot. which I sound so enthusiastic to get to. This is a shonen series. So, not that there aren't themes and that there isn't the plot, but again, it's simple. But as I've always stated, simple does not mean bad. So many people, when they hear me say simple, they want to go, oh, well, so it's bad. No, it just means it's simple. It's a shonen series. For the most part, the plot of a shonen series is very simple. You're introduced to the characters, and they have their antagonists. Sooner or later, they meet an antagonist that forces them to have to train and get more power so they can defeat the antagonist. But when they defeat that antagonist, then another antagonist comes along that's more powerful, and they have to train them more. So continues the circle of life. though, to here, in this case, it goes up to a certain point. So, overall, the plot is, again, this plot of the DWMA trying to stop the witches, trying to stop the unleashing of the Kishin, trying to stop madness from overtaking the world, trying to in fact keep order. Very simple plot. And mind you, there are themes. There's themes of courage and trust and bravery, especially towards the end. The idea of bravery is really shown. There's an influence for what it means to be a Meister. And how that separates them from the witches who live in fear and create power and all that. And very simple themes that you would expect of a shonen series. Again, that's not a bad thing. It's only a bad thing if it isn't done well. And here, it's done extremely well. It works. And it's just a joy to watch the series. Again, I'm talking about these because, again, it's my job to notice them. At the same point in time, if I wasn't watching the review of the series, I wouldn't probably notice them because they're really well integrated in. And, again, the story and the overall plot is just fun to watch. What makes this so is our second talking point, which is the character plots. You have all these individual plot threads and plot lines of the characters that help move the story forward, because ultimately they are connected in the end with the story, whether it be Black Star trying to get stronger because he believes one day he's gonna outshine the gods, and so him training, him and Tsubaki gathering the power, defeating her brother, gaining his power to become the sort of legendary sword mode. And then training to use it, and, him mastering that mode. Death the Kid, and him trying to figure out the secrets of the academy, and everything, and why his father is doing things a certain way, while he has to deal with his own demons of symmetry. Maki, discovering, basically, to stand on her own two feet, to trust in her friend, learning to try not to be such a perfectionist to be able to go on the fly. Because, again, starting out as a being this great student, this straight A perfection student, and basically not so much learning to take the edge off, but learning that she can't be perfect, and having the bravery to stand in a situation that she can't overcome, which she does by the end. Then you have Dr. Frankenstein's plot. That really starts at the midpoint of the series. Everything him being there is there to build up to the situation that puts him in that plot line of him dealing with his madness and him always balancing on that line. The plots of Lord Death and sort of the fight between the DWMA and Arachnophobia, and them trying to get the edge on each other in this war that's going to happen. All these individual plot lines, which are very interesting, very intriguing, they are very engaging to the viewer, and they help motivate and move the plot along to a very nice and solid pace. Yeah, that's the thing I love most about the shonen series, and I'll go into pace here, is that it has a nice, steady pace. The story builds at a nice, steady pace. The fillers fit and everything. It's not as much as I do love it from Dragon Ball Z. It is that thing of where it's not the, hey, we're going to train or we're going to have this big fight, and so we're going to take 3 episodes to build our power. Or we're going to go on a 12-episode filler run. Just so our character can get a new power that he'll use at some point in the series in an important part. Not that I'm looking at any particular anime other than Naruto or Bleach. but yeah, again, the fillers fit right. There's a nice pace to the series. The story just moves along at a nice click, and it always is moving forward. characters are always evolving. And that the other thing is that there's just a nice, steady character development for all the main characters, to where you feel by the end of the series they've grown immensely. It's not like, oh, we're right back at the beginning where we were. These characters, by the end of the series, have grown so much. And again, that's a joy to see. Another thing that makes this series is that it has its own brand of funny comedy. And to some extent, fan service. Though one could sit there and say that the art itself is fan service. Again, that whole nod to Tim Burton. But like I said, we have Blair, who provides sort of the sexy, a few sexy fan service moments. I mean, to some extent, it's like, okay, we're like, okay, I'll tell you which scene. Towards the middle of the series, there's a scene to where there are these, Blair is like this cat that's a witch, so she has 9 lives, and there are these mice witches in the series, and they're all sisters, but they can like go on top of each other and form this single sort of witch mice woman who has big boobs. And so Blair transforms into her human form and clothing, and like, and they're pressing their boobs, and they have all these guys who apparently had been like trapped in rubble, but now they don't care to be trapped in rubble because they have this beautiful sight of these beautiful busty veins. Like, was this trip really necessary? I mean, obviously this scene was put in there like, okay, we have all this stuff going on. This is really a series for teens. For you guys who are watching, here's one scene for you. Not that it feels that out of place. It does, but it's like this very, it's like, okay, we're taking a moment from these serious things happening for this type of comedy to go. Which doesn't, not that it doesn't fit the series, but it's very strange compared to the rest of the series. And I think that was the point. I think the point was like so, something so outlandish comedically that it was funny, and I think that's why it works. My favorite comedy scene, as I said, the episode in which, again, Medusa, in the little, when she's in the little girl's body, turns herself in, and there's a scene where she's talking with both Spirit and Lord Death, and just the round and round circle where they're messing with her, you know. Lord Death picks her up with the thing, and she's swinging her little buddy like, put me down, I'll fight you, I'm a hero right now. I'm like, what do you want, little girl? And then picking her up, her bloomers are showing it, and Spirit, for the Spirit just having this constant fascination with being a daddy, and all the cute things, her little girl, like, it's bloomers. Bloomers look so cute and adorable. You know, Spirit's that guy, by the way, who's like constantly following everything his little girl does, like, and then showing the with a video camera and showing the whole movies to everybody, like, oh, look at her, oh, she's playing with a ball. Meanwhile, everybody's being forced to watch it. It's like, kill me now, please, just put a bullet in my head, somebody. That's the type of person Spirit is, and it leads to some great comedic moments. Just some classic sort of, Japanese comedy tropes are in this series, and they work extremely well. I think those two scenes, though, are the particular ones that stand out in my mind. No surprise the fan service one does, but, yeah, I mean, all of them are funny. You know, Death the Kid's obsession with symmetry is like, really? At this point in time, you're like, focused on symmetry. I mean, there's actually a reason. It actually does lead to him not, I won't say screwing up a mission, but when he's like chasing Korra. Corona, I'm sorry. Wow, it's been a long episode already, folks. Well, when chasing Corona in one episode from like a ghost ship, he allows himself to be veered off because the symmetry around the sun is so beautiful. It's like, really? But yeah, just the funny of Black Star, just all the comedy that's there to lighten the mood and everything, it's perfectly implemented. It makes the story fun to watch. It makes the story a joy to watch. So the comedy, it's just extremely well done. At the end of the day, this is just an absolutely incredible series. The music actually, in all things, is the weakest point. But it's still very, very strong. But it's perfectly blended into the series. That first opening theme is just absolutely outstanding. But the music is wonderful. The art is amazing and incredible. And just this Tim Burton style that it emulates, it's just wonderful to look at. The voice acting, at least for the English track, it's just career-defining. And, you know, again, what I always say, again, doing a simple story and allowing the art, the acting, and the music to enhance it. Done perfectly. This is a wonderful series. This is definitely one of those series I think that should be part of any anime fan's collection. It's just incredible to watch. So for me, Soul Eater is perfect. It gets a 5 out of 5. It was just a joy to watch, and I definitely think any anime fan should have it as part of their collection. And if you can't add it to your collection, make sure you pay your dues and log on to places like Funimation.com or on Hulu, which is where I watched it, and check it out there. It is currently available on Hulu. And guys, Hulu.com, you know, $7.99 a month for Hulu. Can't beat that price. So with that being said, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind that you want to leave the show, my opinions on the show, was I right, was I wrong, do you think I should have talked more about this or whatever, anything interesting you might think is about Soul Eater or about anything I've covered recently, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. You can contact the show by emailing to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by going to www.facebook.com. Search for the Absolution Network. Leave us a comment there. And you can always leave us a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast at www.shaftplus.com. Of course, the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. My Tokyo SOS podcast, which is gearing up for our final movie, Godzilla Final Wars. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network that includes the Comic Book Crazy podcast and Hexcast, the only podcast that reviews every issue of Jim Bailey's Tarot, which is the Black Rose comic book, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends that are on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and from Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space. Stephen Schlechter's Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner's 2 Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many more on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we continue our month of Monster Mash as we go Rankin Bass. Well, it's more time to party because it's a mad monster party. Next week, we review the Rankin Bass classic that nobody's ever heard of, Mad Monster Party. So until next time, Tsunami Generation.
Find cover.
Stay golden.
about does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.